Good afternoon, and thank you for coming. My co-authors Jack Duncan and Peter Ginner and I have thought about the notion of managing and looking at it in terms of how organizations are designed to respond to disasters. As you may know, there is NIMS, or the National Incident Management System, and the Incident Command Structure, or ICS. And while I will talk about those a little bit, I'm not going to suggest through this presentation that they should be undone, but I do think that some of the practices have to be tailored in order to fit the needs of a particular response scenario. So we're going to look at a number of items, 10 in the matter of fact, and they all deal with the way in which response organizations commit resources and design themselves in order to respond to a disaster. Each one will have a brief quotation from a well-known author or active management person. The first one is, less management is greater, is generally better than more management. Management is control, but control is not management. And the idea here is the notion of having tight control when necessary over certain resources in their deployment and loose control over the organization itself and the teams that need to form in order to get something done. Having as few rules as possible, developing policies and procedures that are minimalist in nature, and allowing the management team to coalesce around the task at hand and the strategy of working through their response roles. The second one is, strive for broad strokes rather than narrow ones. Right, broad strokes, we're talking about looking at the big picture. The commander of an incident, or the hierarchy of the structure, it could be at the state level, it could be at the local level, it could even be in an organization, or as simple as responding to a fire drill or something. But having the big picture of what are we trying to accomplish, who are we trying to accomplish it for, having the vision and the future orientation of what the outcome is intended to be is essential to have to achieve effectiveness. Efficiency is an economic consideration, and it should play second fiddle, quite frankly, to effectiveness. The commander of an incident, the incident commander or manager, whatever you wish to call this person, should not micromanage, but details certainly are important in a response. That's not to suggest at all that the details can be overlooked. The details have to be dealt with, but they need to be dealt with at lower levels in the organization. The management structure needs to focus on the desired outcome. Number three, simple systems are preferable to complex ones. And this happens to be my favorite quotation from of all of them that you will see. Seek simplicity. Strive for it. Untangle the knots that are presented in the disaster response. Make things no more complicated than they have to be. One thing to remember is that complex systems, and this includes the interaction of large numbers of organizations and so forth, if the interfaces and boundaries between these organizations are not made as simple as possible, then the response organization itself can deteriorate rather rapidly. Small disruptions in complex systems cause great harm and outcome. You may recall in the response to Hurricane Katrina that one of the downfalls and one of the shortfalls in the response was when FEMA demanded that the roads and highways into New Orleans be closed off and only allow official people to go through, and designated who those were. Getting the names, identities, and credentials of those who were going to be allowed to get through was made into a very complex system, and it delayed the response to the people in need in New Orleans, as we all know. Number four, processes are not ends in themselves, but tend to be viewed that way over time. All processes are for purposes. People often focus on elements of processes rather than the objectives, particularly when they've not done them for a while. This makes it very important that organizations Response organizations practice, practice, and practice. Having drills and exercises is exceptionally important. It builds the repetitive nature of things, and it helps them identify the need for flexibility, and eliminates the process orientation as the organization has to respond to different types of disasters or different types of drills over a period of time. Change is inevitable in the response, even during the response play. That has to be taken into consideration. And maintaining a focus on the objectives. What is the organization trying to accomplish? Who are we trying to help? That's the important thing, not the process itself. Number five, don't seek perfection. I thought it was a good quote, even though I'm not a fan of Blackwater USA, but I think he had this concept pretty well specified. Striving to be perfect will lead to excessive complexity. And going back to the first of these lessons, control, the notion that management, that control is management and is not. And trying to create that type of control that leads to perfection also is compounded in through the sense of having a process orientation. 80% fast is better than 100% very slowly. That, if you followed the events, so using Katrina again, the response was extremely slow, and had it been more rapidly focused and not sought to be a perfectionist, I think that's what they were trying to do, although it's not very clear. Objectives need to be established and management put into place in order to try to achieve as rapidly as possible 80% of the goals, and then incrementally add to that until all of them have been obtained. One size does not fit all. This is where those who are steeped in incident command structure will quibble with me a bit. But I would remind everyone that the incident command structure was designed to be flexible, and that not all of the positions needed to be filled in every response. Depending on the scale of the response, the incident command system needs to be scaled to meet that demand. In many drills and exercises that we've conducted, we have encountered frequently, unfortunately, that incident commanders want to create as large a structure as they possibly can. They think that it is possible to scale the organization down rather than to scale it up. And we have found that this slows the response considerably. The organization is slow to develop. The incident commander needs to have as quickly as possible situation awareness so that the appropriate scale of the organization can be designed and implemented in order to meet the needs of the particular disaster response. There may be exceptions. You may need to add positions that have not been previously identified, or scale them down or scale them up as the situation dictates. Number seven, all solutions are temporary. This is particularly true in disaster response. Problems occur because you're dealing with people and particularly people's emotions, and therefore any solution that the organization comes up with is likely to be temporary in the sense that there are going to be needs that are unmet. A problem that many managers have in disasters and otherwise is that they invest in their own ego, and so the accumulation of the feeding of this ego is through the structure of the organization, command and control, which is not necessarily what needs to be accomplished in response to a disaster. Knowing that all solutions are temporary can move on and not get upset, but make the appropriate changes that need to be made in order to get the response correct. Number eight, measure only those things that are important. Most response organizations have developed fairly elaborate data collection methodologies. Forms, forms, and forms. One of the things that we have been trying to teach disaster responders in the state of Alabama is that when a response is being organized, one of the things to do is to assign someone to look at the forms that are asked to be filled out and collected and identify elements of those that can be marked out and not dealt with or dealt with at a later point, so that the measurement process is going to focus on those critical sets of things that are needed for that particular response. It's part of the one size does not fit all concept as well. One should manage to the measures, but only measure the right things. And that takes some time and thought by the incident commander in every situation. Number 9, accountants and information technology folks work for the organization and not vice versa. For my accountant friends and my information technology friends, they frown at me about this one because they think they know all the answers. But in reality, they are staff. They are support functions that need to work for toward the objectives and achieving the strategy that's been set out for a particular disaster response. Identify and eliminate the three stupidest things that the team does, do this monthly. This can be done, again, through drills and exercises. Certainly, what comes to the forefront here is the after-action reporting process is critical in order to eliminate those stupid things. Identify what went wrong, make the appropriate changes in both organization structure and resource deployment. And the last bullet there is, I think, exceptionally important. Don't make folks put up with stupid rules, policies, and procedures. They will figure out a way to work around them, they will game the system, and they will simply clog up the works. Number 10, folks will not always get it at first. By definition, unconventional response management is unconventional. In teaching these principles to first responders and response organizations, the Alabama Department of Public Health, the Georgia Emergency Management Agency, and the one in Mississippi. Those are the ones we've worked with most closely in the South. In teaching this process, it usually takes about 3 or 4 exercises that we facilitated in order for these folks to get the idea of designing the organization to fit the scale of the response required. As a result, we try to give them, in our drills and exercises that we design, the most robust possible scenarios, ranging from natural disasters to infectious disease to blasts and acts of terrorism and so forth, so that we can help them overcome this 10th item, getting it. That is, turning loose of some of it, some of the control from the command standpoint, allowing the teams to function and function well. Thank you.
We'll have questions and answers after all the sessions. Okay, our next speaker is Dr. Arturo Vargas Bustamante. Dr. Vargas is an assistant professor in the Department of Health Services at the UCLA School of Public Health. His areas of expertise are cross-border healthcare and Latino health. His work considers the role of international migration and immigration integration in affecting access to healthcare in host countries, particularly in the United States. Arturo received his PhD in public policy from UC Berkeley in 2008. He specialized in program evaluation and in contingent valuation. As part of his professional experience, he worked as a consultant for the Inter-American Development Bank and for the California Program on Access to Care, where he was responsible for the cross-border health insurance project. Dr. Vargas started his professional career in the Health Financing Administration of the Mexican Ministry of Health. In 2002, he became the youngest recipient of the National Award of Public Administration Research in Mexico. Dr. Vargas will present Trade-off Between Centralized and Decentralized Health Services, Evidence from a Major Anti-Poverty Program in Mexico.
Thank you, April.